right, ready?
I think so.
We're live. Okay. Winter break is over, and we're back at In the Know, breaking down the U's news. And we've actually got some really exciting news to start off with. Not campus news, but podcast news. Mariah King is no longer with us. She's alive, but she's just not at the Daily anymore. And we have a new reporter in her place. Do you care to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Tiffany. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I guess so. Nice to meet you. That works. Tiffany used to be the neighborhoods reporter here at the Daily, but now she's switched over to the podcast team. And so her and I are going to be bringing the podcast news this semester. Used to be King of Diamonds. Now it's Tiffany's Diamonds. I don't know. Some people in the office suggested that. I actually don't like the way that sounds.
I don't either.
Okie doke. Let's jump into our first news roundup.
The Soap Factory might be shuttering its doors for good. The historic Mercy Homes art venue is struggling to pay off millions of dollars in debt after trying to finance a reconstruction of the building. The Soap Factory used to be home to the Haunted Basement production, which drew in university students and wider Minneapolis residents alike every year.
University of Minnesota student Andrew Geller has been reported missing since Sunday. Geller is a member of Minnesota Hillel, a Jewish student group on campus. Hillel posted an alert on their Facebook page about Geller's disappearance, urging anyone with information about his whereabouts to contact police.
Niels Hassemo, the university's 13th president, died Wednesday at the age of 87. Hassemo was president from 1988 to 1997. According to Hassemo's biography on the Office of the President's website, his native Swedish accent helped bolster his popularity with Minnesotans.
And lastly, a potential 2% tuition increase for state residents is drawing criticism from lawmakers. Legislators told the Minnesota Daily they hoped the U wouldn't hike tuition to cover rising administrative costs, like paying competitive wages to staff and faculty.
And those are our headlines for this week.
The federal government is officially shut down, with lawmakers set to continue negotiations to reach an agreement.
This government shutdown now reaches day 12.
Today marks day 20 of the federal government shutdown.
To the government shutdown tonight, day 31, and the impact is growing.
As of today, the shutdown is 34 days old. What are the first signs of a shutdown at the university?
Well,
that's Jake Steinberg.
For some people at the university,
he covers faculty, staff, and higher education at the Daily.
The shutdown is almost become a ritual to them, because if you'll remember, the government has shut down three times in the last year, in 2018, I should say. The main way that the shutdown has affected their research, and we can get into this later, is because they can't work with the partnerships with the partners in the federal government that they rely on to do a lot of the work it is that they do. So a good example of that is Paul Morin.
I'm Paul Morin. I'm director of the Polar Geospatial Center.
Director of the Polar Geospatial Center here at the University of Minnesota. And this is a big project that produces topography of, they've done like the whole Arctic.
We make maps for the poles to support science. So, you know, in the good old days, you would get a paper map. And yeah, we do a little bit of that now, but a lot of what we do is we turn satellite imagery into information that people can use to make decisions, whether that's how to get there or science.
Well, they're measuring the elevation of everything, and you can, you know, see it to such you can measure changes in such minute detail.
We often know the ground conditions better than almost anyone else. We can do the topography, for example, of Minnesota, and we can tell you when a tree was cut down. We can tell you when a house was built, or a landslide happened, or the shoreline eroded, you know, on Lake Superior. And so I'm the person that's responsible, made responsible by the U.S. government for making geospatial data, making the maps of Antarctica.
As for how the shutdown has affected Paul's work,
it seems like it's been mostly a major inconvenience.
Well, this facility, the Polar Geospatial Center, we're all University of Minnesota employees, but the money comes from the federal government. And so we write a proposal that goes to a federal agency like the National Science Foundation. They send it out to the community that would be served. So in our case, for example, it would be polar science. That community reviews it. They say, yeah, fund them or fund them higher or lower, or they don't quite get it, don't fund them. And then we receive, the university receives in a, what's called an award, and that money we can draw on over a period of, say, 3 to 5 years. The university is sending bills to the National Science Foundation. There's nobody there to pay the bill. So the university is floating us right now.
For all these different research projects, for all these different researchers all over campus, the university is having to just basically spend the money on faith that they will be reimbursed when the government comes back on. And it is on faith. They have been reimbursed after previous shutdowns, but the longer the shutdown goes on, the riskier it becomes for the university to keep doing this.
And according to Jake, the university is fronting researchers an average of $500,000 a day.
Where is this $500,000 a day coming from?
So the university's assistant chief financial officer, Mike Volna, told me and said at a roundtable conversation on Friday that the university has cash accounts that they are drawing from, and this comes mainly from state funds and tuition dollars. Your tuition dollars, Luke's tuition dollars, my tuition dollars. And this money is normally sitting in an account where it accrues interest, right? And so even though the university is pretty confident it'll get reimbursed at some point, they are, in spending this money that was in an account, foregoing the interest that would have been gathering on that money. And Volna actually said that the amount of interest that they have forgone, it's kind of trivial in the scheme of things, but it's about $25,000. Thus far, the university has spent about $10 million covering the research expenses, and they project that by the end of January, it's going to be $14 million. The longer the shutdown goes on, they're not sure they're going to be able to continue doing this. The vice president of research, Chris Kramer, told me that if the shutdown goes another month, goes deep into February, maybe March, they're going to start to have very serious conversations about whether or not it's sustainable to keep funding the research, writing that $500,000 check every single day.
If they decide at their next roundtable conversation that they can't cut more $500,000 checks on a daily basis, what happens to the researchers who are depending on that money?
The biggest risk is that we don't come to work tomorrow. But we've been assured by the university that they can keep this going for some period of time. Nobody knows exactly how long. But the other risk to our work is that we work with scientists at other agencies, for example, NASA. They're a federal employee working for NASA, they can't call us and talk about work. It's breaking the law. And so certain key aspects of what we're doing can't be performed right now. And remember, all of this costs money, so we're being paid and we're trying to push work forward, but certain aspects of our work just can't happen right now. And so we work on other things. And, you know, it would be a better use of the taxpayers' money if we could work on exactly what we need when we wanted to do it. And there are some things we just can't work on right now.
So overall, what is the risk to scientific research here at the university?
The main risk that researchers are foreseeing for science is that this is going to have kind of trickle-down effects for all of science. So there are some researchers that are producing data that other researchers are then reliant on, and if there's, you know, one area in the chain that's disrupted, it's disrupting all kinds of other research.
So we're producing the topography of the Earth. That is of value if you're trying to measure canopy or coastal erosion, you're trying to look at rivers meandering, you're trying to look at permafrost melting. All of these things are now very, very intertwined. And I'm simplifying greatly, but you know, we in science, we collaborate. And we're working with the best people possible, wherever they may be. And sometimes they're at universities, sometimes they're at research institutions, sometimes they're at government facilities, sometimes they're in the military. Right now, we can't get to our colleagues who are at NASA and NSF.
There, I mean, I have dozens of examples of projects that are stalled because, again, it's like having a coworker out sick for 5 weeks. You can kind of do what you can to work around them, but eventually there are things that you can't get past. There's no way to progress forward. And so there are a lot of projects right now that are either stalled or on their way there.
This is not the way to run a government.
Senator, how does this end?
Well, it could end on tomorrow by the Senate doing its job and taking up the bills that are there that have broad bipartisan support, that Republicans and Democrats have supported, and pass those bills so that these students, this research, and the hundreds of thousands of Americans around the country aren't being used as pawns and hostages in this this debate around immigration reform.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening.